You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. The Daily Racing Podcast from William Hill.
And they're off.
Listen to the podcast at williamhill.com/podcast.
Third festival win and the biggest one today.
Or subscribe via iTunes by searching William Hill Podcasts in the music store.
Hello and a warm welcome along to the William Hill Daily Racing Podcast. You've joined us on Monday's edition of the podcast where we're racing at Kempton, Ludlow and Plumpton. And you'll hear every race live from 12:50pm with us here on William Hill Racing Radio. It's Gordon Brown, Ollie Pimrott and James Millman in the studio to guide you through all of the action. But ahead of all that, joining myself, Sam Norris, to look at four contests on Monday is Rory Delaghi. How are you, Rory?
I am very well indeed, Sam. Thank you.
Good. Enjoy yesterday. There's, as ever, a lot of it on Saturday, but a thrilling day of racing.
Yeah, really good days of racing, both on the jumping front here with Ascot and Weatherby, particularly the Charlie Hall Chase, but some good supporting cards as well. And, of course, the British Cup last night, which was full of the thrills and spills you would have expected. And, of course, a great conclusion with America's greatest horse of the last 30 years proving his worth and going out in a high.
Yeah, what a story. We'll get on to American Pharoah in due course. We'll start with the action on the domestic front, though. As you touched on there, the Charlie Hall Chase won by Q Card, and the Racing Post summed it up perfectly, back to his best. That's a return to the form of old for him.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy season for him last year. If you remember, a couple of years ago, he was being aimed at the Gold Cup when he succumbed to a hind leg / pelvis injury in the February before the Gold Cup. Plenty of people argued as to whether he should have been going for that race when the Champion Chase looked very weak that year. But I think Colin Tizard made a bold, brave decision, and arguably the right one as well. I think he proved he stayed yesterday. I think he's proved he stayed already. He's won the Betfair Chase over 3-mile 1. But again, what we saw with him yesterday, a little bit like the King George when he was beaten a couple of years ago, he's gone very, very well through the race. Looked like he was sure to win easily, jumping the third last. He's then suddenly floundered a little bit, and you thought for a second he was going to be swamped, but he's found again from the last and gone away again at the line. And I think that's rather what he did in the King George, even though he was beaten by Sivaniaco Conti that day. He stayed on again, having briefly floundered. And I wonder whether an extra quarter of a mile at the end of his race would actually see him in a better light. The downside, of course, is that The 3-mile division is stronger now than it's been for a long time. You know, potentially that was a weak enough Gold Cup he was being aimed at. We've been used to one or two outstanding horses, the likes of Cotto Star and Denman, in that division. But now we've got four or five really exciting staying chasers, and the likelihood is that Q Card's a year or two too late to win that. But it would be a tremendous story if he could come back from that injury, given he was, you know, he's been on the scene for a long time, won the Champion Bumper as a 4-year-old, and he's been the biggest star ever in the Tizard Yard. So, you know, the more he can complete this comeback and show himself to be the equal of the current crop, the better story that will be. But it might be asking a little bit too much.
Yeah, certainly will be. And to be fair to Collins, as I did say prior to the race, that he had him tuned up for it. What do you think will be the eventual target for him this year?
I'd go the usual races. He might go Betfair Chase, he'd go King George, he'd go Gold Cup.
Yeah.
What he'll do between the Christmas feature and the Gold Cup, I'm not sure whether he'd be given a rest to freshen up. You know, these things, lots of things change in racing for various reasons, be it weather-related, injury-related, trainer form, etc. So that's the path they wanted to ground a couple of years ago, so I imagine they will do it again. And you do have that £1 million bonus this year, so he might well be tempted by that. But of course, you know, once that only lasts one race for most horses.
Yeah.
So how the plans will change after his next race, I don't know, but that seems an obvious way for him to go.
Yeah, OK then. On to Saturday night's action now then. Of course, the Breeders' Cup, a tremendous night of racing from Keeneland, and it was all over at a sensible time as well this year, Rory, which I liked. We could watch all the racing without having to be up until the small hours. obviously back to Santa Anita next year.
Yeah. When you go to the West Coast, then it can become a little bit antisocial. But it was before 10 o'clock our time that the Classic was run.
Just about.
It ends up being run about 15, 20 minutes later than the published time here because, again, with US racing, the published time is their post time. And for a race like the Classic, they have this parade in front of the racegoers in the stands, which means that it ends up going back a little bit. So just after 10 to 10. Which is a perfectly reasonable hour and enabled you to go out and enjoy Halloween to the full.
Exactly.
If you were so inclined. Not quite a grandstand finish. I mean, you read it and it reads that way. American Pharoah beats FNX 6.5 lengths with 4.5 lengths back to the third. He destroyed his field, but it was so straightforward. There was no drama. And we're used to drama with the Breeders' Cup Classic. It's usually a 12, 13 runner race. And this is the smallest field that I can recall. For it. There were 9 runners when Curlin won, I think, but only 8 went to post, including Glenn Eagles, who the Americans were genuinely scared of. I think he ended up being second favourite on the he was priced up at 12-1 or thereabouts yesterday morning. He was well back through the day. I don't know who by, because I have yet to meet a person who thought he had any chance whatsoever.
Agreed.
Unless they were fully in love with Aidan O'Brien. And even then, you needed to think twice about it. So it wasn't a great surprise to see him flop and finish last. That won't really bother the Coolmore boys. They knew that this looked a very hard task on paper. They can just say, well, we can write that off. He wasn't a dirt horse. But it's a bit of a shame to end his career that way. But American Pharoah, on the other hand, popped out in front. FNX tried to put a bit of pressure on him. And he was the only one who ever laid a glove on him at all, and even then he was just within healing distance. He was never really a threat, and the great horse strolls clear to win by a pretty big margin.
That's right. It was a mixed day for the Coolmore boys and the Ballydoyle team. One of the best backed horses of the day, both here and in America, was Legatissimo. Ended up going off 8-11 in the fillies and mares turf, and was beaten in the end by Stephanie Skitten, who of course is infamous really because she was involved in the secret gesture drama. So good to see her make the papers for a different racing reasons.
Yeah, and there was almost an irony involved in that as well, in that Irad Ortiz, who rode Stephanie's Kitten, didn't keep her entirely straight in the last photo either. She's actually caused marginal interference to Legatissimo. Some would suggest that Ryan Moore snatched up the runner-up in vaguely dramatic style as well, in almost a pastiche of what happened earlier in the season. That result was never going to be changed, though. Stephanie Skitten was clear best on the day. It was just one run too many for Legatissimo. She's run very, very well, but the thing about the Breeders' Cup is you can't run to 95% of your potential and win these races. Legatissimo's been on the go all season. We've seen it with a couple of horses as well. Obviously, Golden Horn was just touched off as well. He again ran a really good race, but that extra bit of zip that we would have expected from a great horse here was just missing after a long, hard season. And the pair of them lost little cast in defeat, but it was just a shame to end what had been stellar seasons for the pair of them on a slightly low note.
Yeah. We'll get into the Breeders' Cup turf, and as you say, obviously Golden Horn beaten by Found. Not too much of a disappointment for Golden Horn, of course. I mean, he's won the Dante, the Derby, the Eclipse, the Arc this year, second in the Judmont, second in the Breeders' Cup turf. It's been a superstar season for him. Again, possibly one race too many for him. Maybe the ground wasn't suitable, but the race was certainly ran to suit. And in the end, there can't be too many excuses.
No, very few excuses. I mean, we were told beforehand the ground would not be put forward as an excuse. And then it rather was a little bit afterwards, which is a shame. And the bottom line is that the going will be listed historically as good. The only issue that people have with it was maybe it was a little bit rough on the second day and slightly loose on top. But if you've got a horse that you believe should belong among the greats and you say, yeah, he had an excuse because he's been on good ground on his final start, he didn't really like good ground, that doesn't make you look like a great racehorse.
Yeah.
Great racehorses don't need excuses for running on good ground. So that would have been better off unsaid, I think. For me, Golden Horn has only run 2 or 3 pounds below his best form. You get the impression again with the greats that whenever they're presented with their biggest challenge, the very best pull out even more to win. And we've seen that a few times with Frankel, with See the Stars in the Arc, that when the chips are down and maybe when things aren't absolutely ideal for them, suddenly they dig a little bit deeper and show that there are extra reserves there. And maybe that's what we didn't have with Golden Horn. We had a horse who showed everything he could do through the season and it was brilliant, but there wasn't that extra angle with him. Found has been running really well in the second half of the season. Unlike Golden Horn, she's at a proper break mid-season. She started early, being aimed at the classics, being aimed at either the 1,000 guineas or the Irish version. She didn't come to hand quite as early as expected, but she ran well in all her races. What the team there did with her, though, was from May onwards, they gave her a couple of months off. And they brought her back, and she ran extremely well on all her starts before last night, finishing seconds in the Irish Champions Stakes and in the Champions Stakes, which were both superb runs from her. The arc didn't work out for her, given where she was drawn and how she was ridden. Last night, she was ridden a little bit more prominently. She is a hold-up filly, but she wasn't held up right out the back of the field, and that made a big difference to her last night. And the way the race was run certainly suited her. She was able to run Golden Horn down. She probably improved 2 pounds, and that was probably due to tactics as much as anything else. A few people are suggesting that this is a shame because she was on Lasix, and that's why she suddenly turned the form around. I think that's the biggest load of nonsense I've ever heard in my life, and I've heard quite a lot of nonsense.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole... I think you can have a very robust argument about whether you should use Lasix or not, and one of the nicest aspects of last night was the Breeders' Cup sprint winner. You'd expect all the sprinters on dirt in the States to be on Lasix. Maria Burrell's horse went without Lasix, and she made a point afterwards in an interview saying she didn't believe in using it because she believes the breed should be as tough as possible. And that's a really good point. But if you're allowed to use it, you might as well use it. There's no shame in it.
Yeah. Okay, then. Yeah, she's been knocking on the door of winning an event of that calibre for some time, hasn't she, fans? So good to see her come back and be successful over in Keeneland last night. That about wraps up the highlights of the action on Saturday. So much great racing. We'd be here all day if we were to review it all. But we must move on to matters on Monday afternoon. We've got Kempton, Ludlow and Plumpton to enjoy. 3 races from Kempton on the podcast, and we'll take in 1 from Ludlow. But we start with Kempton's 2 o'clock. This is a limited handicap chase over 3 miles. It's a Class 3 event with 9 of them down to go to post. The going at the time of recording is good to soft in places, but still might take a bit of guessing, this one.
Yeah, the going shouldn't be too bad on the chase course. Historically at Kempton, the worst of the going would be wider on the hurdles course, although, again, going back long enough, the going would be softer on the hurdles course because it would have been used for flat racing as well at times, and that's clearly not the issue now. But the chase course never tends to get too bad, so I would treat it as being good ground for the chases. The two who stand out for me in this, it was a really tough race. It looks very competitive, difficult to rule too many out. I was going to say, I don't hugely fancy Marden Courts, but he might improve for going over fences for the first time. And apart from that, you can make a case for most of these. Port Mellon for Paul Nicholls is liable to be popular, but he's been expensive to follow. Better than he showed at Cheltenham on his latest start, but he will be ready for this return. He was thrown into some very, very tough races when he went hurdling in the first place, into Grade 2 company straight away, for example, at Cheltenham. And that's made it tough for him. He, of course, was the horse who gave Darrell Jacob that horrible fall at the Cheltenham Festival a couple of years ago when he went into the crowd. That gives you an idea of poor Miller's temperament to a degree, although he's not particularly wayward. That was a bit of an aberration, but he's not been the easiest to win with. In saying that, he was an unbeaten pointer. So going chasing after a career over hurdles should see him in a better light. And I can see him being well supported here. You have to respect him, but his win record puts me off slightly. Having looked at the tissue prices I've been given here, I was very surprised to see what price... I don't think I'll get this price either. Very surprised to see Billy Marriott priced up around 10 or 11 to 1. Harry Fry's son of Dr. Massini, was a useful hurdler 2 or 3 seasons ago, had a long time off the track. He won at Hereford, for example. It gives you an idea of how long he'd been off. Made his chase debut at this track in May in what was a very well-contested race, despite the fact there was only 5 runners, including Frampton, who reopposes tomorrow. He would have won that race, in my opinion. He ended up... Art Moresque won it quite easily, but Billy Marriott had moved through the challenge Art Moresque and seemed to be travelling very well when he knuckled on landing after making the slightest mistake at the second last fence, lost his back legs and unseated his jockey, allowing the other one to come home well clear. I would have thought that's the best, you know, had he seen that race out and won it, he'd have the best chase form on offer here. And yet he's been ignored by whoever's compiled the tissue price that I'm looking at here. He's unproven at the trip. He did stay 2 mile 5 well over hurdles, So I would have thought at Kempton's sharpish track, he'd get the 3 miles. Travelled superbly well and settled well in that race when he unseated. And the impression you get from that is that he's a slightly dubious jumper. He was. His jumping was very good through that race, and it was just one of those, as I said, very slight mistake. He was going fast at the time. They'd quickened up to go clear of the rest of the field, and he just couldn't quite get the landing gear out. And when he tried to correct himself, he lost the back legs. I think he's promising. He's a 9-year-old, and he's on paper too old for this sort of race. You expect a horse coming into chases of this nature to be young and improving. You know, you expect 5- and 6-year-olds to dominate here. But of course, because he's had so long off the track, he is still very unexposed. And I thought Billy Marriott had as good a chance as anything. The main danger is probably Urquhart, who stays very well. He's a course and distance winner over hurdles here, and he will run his race. He's not the easiest ride in the world. He tends to take a fair bit of driving, but he does find for pressure, and that's crucial. A few of these tend to travel well and then don't find. Urquhart often gets himself off the bridle during his races, but then stays on very well at the end. So I think he's sure to run his race. And then Tom Cannon, he's got a jockey who's ideal for him as well. So Urquhart the danger, but Billy Marriott would be the choice for me.
Okay, Billy Marriott then for Rory in that 2 o'clock contest at Kempton. We'll move on then to their next race on the card. This is the 2:30, a handicap hurdle over 2.05. Five runners go down for this class two, and we'll have to start here with the top weight, the King George winner, Silviniaco Conti, who's also a winner at Aintree on his last start last season. Slight disappointment in the Gold Cup, but in a race like this, he's £12 clear of his rivals. Can he shoulder that weight to victory?
It's a difficult question to answer, given that he's running over hurdles for the first time in 3 seasons. And there must be a chance that he's in here. I can't believe it's a Pretemps qualifier.
Yeah, I was thinking
it would be a massive surprise if he ended up lining up in the Pretemps final at Cheltenham. From what I gather, Paul Nicholls has said he will never run him at Cheltenham again. But it's one of the, if he ended up winning the King George from the Gold Cup favourite, for example, Nicholls will find a reason why whatever went wrong before wasn't the horse's fault. Last year he was still banging on about how people kept saying he didn't handle Cheltenham, and it was absolute nonsense. He handled Cheltenham perfectly well, and now he's singing from the same hymn sheet as everyone else. But things change all the time. The fact that he's running over hurdles, given that he's almost certainly going to go for either the Betfair Chase or the King George or both, suggests that he wants a tune-up for those races. He's a horse who comes to hand fairly early, though. He's not difficult to get fit. He's quite light-bodied and clean-winded. So he shouldn't lack for fitness here, but the very fact that he's running over hurdles does suggest that that's going to be the case. So he's a difficult one to back. His hurdles form was very good. Bear in mind, he was an impressive winner of his first couple of starts over hurdles for Paul Nicholls, and he ran extremely well under a penalty in the international hurdle at Cheltenham, a track that we now believe he doesn't handle.
Yeah.
And yet he split Menorah and Kew Card that day. So on his old form, he's still perfectly well handicapped, and he showed last season that he was as good as ever over fences. So if he's ready for this, he could outclass the field. But again, Paul Nicholls has never found the need to run him over hurdles since he started going chasing. So my gut feeling is he might just need the run and he'll be looked after. Trying to find the winner beyond that. Mr. Fizz looks a little high in the weights. He's very likely. He's done very well for Bundle Pickard, but he's been running in slightly lesser company. And there was a valuable race he won at Newton Abbott last time, but it was a summer handicap hurdle. He won of a mark of 140. £5 higher against classy horses probably catches him out. My choice in the race would end up being Brother Ted, who is a course and distance winner, a horse who came to hand early last season, unlucky faller on his reappearance last year before scoring here, and scoring in good style as well in a race that's worked out well. He was a little bit disappointing in the spring, but he did get back to form on the final day of the season when winning a handicap off a mark of 135. He's up in the weights again for that, but I think he is capable, given we know he goes well at this time of the year. He handles this track. I think he can overcome the handicap mark. Again, you always have to ask yourself the question with Pretemps qualifiers: does a trainer want to be winning a handicap off a mark of 144 if they're going to go for the final in the first place? It may well be that no one in this race really has the Pretemps final in mind as a target, which is rather odd. Kaisersberg is not out of this. He didn't really take the fences last season, And his form figures read fell on Sita Pulldub in his last three starts, but that's slightly misleading, and he's liable to do better back over hurdles. Gavin Sheehan riding for Warren Greatrex. Warren now has his horses in very good form as well. Again, the prices that I've seen suggest that he'd be the rank outsider of the field at 20-1 plus. I think that would be dangerous to assume. And he's liable to be fit for this. Again, he's gone well fresh in the past. And then the other horse in the race is the horse who started favourite for the Cesarewitch last time, Low Key, who won the Cesarewitch trial at Newmarket very easily in September. Didn't fire in the big race itself, but he didn't have a great draw that day either. Could easily bounce back. And the fact that you've got Savignac Conti in the race means he gets into this handicap of a weight of 10 stone 4. And he might end up being favourite for it, given how progressive he's been over hurdles this summer. So you've got to bear him in mind as well. It's a really interesting race, only 5 runners, but you've got to give all 5 a chance. No idea how you would price this up. It's one of those races. Often you look at a race and you know what order to put the horses in immediately. This is a very difficult one because a lot depends on whether you see Savignac Conti as potentially outclassing his field, or whether you think he's in here for a bit of a tune-up before he goes over fences next time out. Gut feeling is the latter. And I'd hope you'd get a half decent price about Brother Ted.
Okay, interesting race then, and Rory siding with Brother Ted in the 2:30 at Kempton. One more to come from Kempton then before moving to taking that Ludlow race. This is the 3:05, a graduation chase over 2.5 miles, a class 2. Again, we've got the 5 runners, and all of these making their first start of the season, Rory.
Yeah, again, a really interesting race. Small field, but all the horses bear consideration, and there are complicating factors in that none of them have run this season, and the best of them are running over the wrong trip. So it's one of those races you'd love to watch, but it's trappy to bet in. Best horse in the race is Smart Place, who is still capable of better over fences. I think he had a half decent season last year. Alan King blamed himself for getting him beaten in the Hennessy. He thought the horse was a cracking bet in the Hennessy first time up. He finished 5th in the end, and Kingy put his hands up and said, "I made a mistake. You can't go into a race like the Hennessy, especially on heavy ground, without a prep run." The horse didn't have a prep run, and he felt that lost him the race. He then was very narrowly beaten in the the Betbright Cup at Cheltenham has been various things, the Pillar of Properties Chase and the Country Gentlemen's Association Chase, but it's now the Betbright Cup. He was only just touched off in that. That's a very good performance. Mini Cloud's the winner of that, of course, and he showed his worth after that. Dinast behind him that day. Only 8th in the Gold Cup, but the Gold Cup, there were no prisoners taken in that. It was an exceptionally good race. And there's no great shame in finishing a fairly distant 8th of 16. And then he bounced back to form. Again, he couldn't really make any impact, but 4th to Savignac Conti, beaten less than 10 lengths in the Betfred Bowl, is right up there with the best of his form. If he repeats that here, and his horse has gone well fresh in the past. I know we had the issue of him not having a prep in the Hennessy, but it's a very punishing
different race
in bad ground. He'd been a winner first time up a couple of times before. The only issue you would have with him here is 2.5 miles, arguably being on the sharp side for him. He's a horse, of course, who was placed in world hurdles, but he was effective around 2.5 miles as a hurdler off pretty high marks as well. Ran very well at Ascot a couple of times, and I think he might get away with it. He'd just about be the pick, but you know, if he wasn't hard fit for this, then he'd be vulnerable, and obviously at the trip he's vulnerable as well. But he has enough of a class edge that the horse who's probably best suited by conditions would be Paul Nicholls' Easter Day. Again, his form figures don't inspire confidence, but he's a lot better than he looks. 3rd of 4 fell and pulled up in 3 runs last season. But he just weakened out of things late in the graduation chase at Newbury in his reappearance last year, which turned out to be half-decent form. I think that was the horse who won this race last year that actually won that. He then was absolutely cruising in a big sponsored handicap at Cheltenham in January when he clipped the top of the fence at the top of the hill and came down. Most people were of the opinion that he would have won that race at the time. And then he was, I think, favourite for the Betbright Chase at Kempton on his next start, made a very bad early mistake and was pulled up fairly quickly. That was the race won by Rocky Creek. So he's running a very good race. He's been shaping better than the result. You'd be a bit worried about his jumping now. As I said, he jumped pretty well at Newbury until he got tired, but obviously fell at Cheltenham. That was his first mistake of the race. But sometimes when a horse does that and jumps really well and then makes a mistake which gets them on the deck, their confidence can go a little bit, and the fact that he jumped poorly at Kempton is a worry. 2.5 miles is probably his trip, though. I know he was up to 3 miles at Kempton, but you know he was unproven at the trip at the time. He'll be ready for this. But again, you know, he was running off a mark of 142 in his last start. Smad Place, for example, was deemed well handicapped off 155 in the Hennessy. So it shows that Easterday's really got about a stone to find with Smad Place, which he might do in the conditions, but it's maybe a little bit too much to ask.
Okay, Smad Place then getting the vote? Smart Place then for Rory in that 3.05. We're taking one from Ludlow now then before we wrap up the podcast. This is their 2.40, a handicap hurdle over 2 mile and 5 furlongs. 8 runners line up for this Class 3 event. You could give chances to quite a few, Rory.
You could. It looks pretty tight. There is one who stands out on recent form. This is a very different track to the one he ran out last time. But here's Herbie. Who'd dropped in the weights, was well backed at Cheltenham last time out at the showcase meeting, and went pretty close, finished a close third to Towering in a conditional jockey's handicap hurdle. Might have won that if he'd pinged the second last. Travelled well in the race, raced towards the head of midfield, looked to be going best of those in the chasing bunch, just made a mistake at a crucial time at the second last, and then took time to find top gear again up the hill, but was closing at the line. I've got a slight suspicion that the overall form of that race is slightly suspicious, because the runner-up, who was a big price, Mile House, was given a tremendous ride in front. His rider tried to slow things down, tried to steal it from the front, and it wasn't as true a pace as you often get at Cheltenham. So here's Hermie, was better placed than most. But in saying that, you know, he was well back before the races, if they're expecting a big run, and he wasn't seen to as good effect as the runner-up. So he does still appeal as being reasonably well handicapped. Handicappers put him up again to 117, but that's still lower than he was this time last year. He's rated in the mid-120s this time last year, and he clearly is back to his best. So in a competitive enough race, he gets the vote. The danger for me would be Ascendant. Fitness might be a little bit of a concern for the son of Medician, having been off for 7 months or so. But Johnny Farley's hurdlers have been running very well in the last 4 to 5 weeks, very consistent. Most of these given their running. And Ascendant is, of course, a distance winner as well. So if he's fit, he would go close. The fact that Here's Herbie has had a run in the last couple of weeks sways the verdict in his favour.
Okay, then Here's Herbie it is for Rory in that 2.40 at Ludlow. Just remind us, please, then one more time of your 4 selections for the action on Monday.
Yeah, in the 2 o'clock at Kempton, I've selected Billy Marriott. In the 2.30, the Pretemps qualifier, I'm going with Brother Ted. The trip might be on the short side, but Smad Place gets my vote in the graduation chase at 3.05. And in the 2.40 at Ludlow, the proven race fitness of Here's Herbie can prove crucial.
Excellent stuff. There are the thoughts of Rory Delaghi ahead of the racing on Monday. And remember to tune in to William Hill Racing Radio from 12:50 p.m. where we've got it all covered. It's Kempton, Ludlow and Plumpton. Gordon Brown, Ollie Pimlott and James Millman will be in the studio. So make sure you join us for all of that on Monday afternoon. Thank you very much for joining me on the podcast today, Rory, and best of luck on Monday.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.